Welcome to Crypto Talk Radio, the podcast for everyday investors like you. Visit us on the web at cryptotalkradio.net. And now, here's your host, Leister.
Thank you for that, Bailey, and welcome everybody out there on Crypto Talk Radio, found at cryptotalkradio.net. Hopefully everybody out there had a pleasant July, 4th of July weekend. I was not happy. There's a lot of nonsense with the whole fireworks. I'm not a fireworks fan. I was a fireworks fan, but that's when I was a kid. Feels like some people never grew out of it. I understand. I am more about sleep, I believe, in the value of sleep and keeping people young. Seems like most people don't understand that, and I understand that, but it is what it is. It's past. Hopefully you did have a good 4th of July weekend. I have not focused heavily on cryptocurrency. I watch little news bits here and there. I'm watching and waiting because it feels like we're at a Q3 waiting phase. There's a lot of disruption, but overall, in terms of news, there's not much going on. There is a lot of garbage tokens out there that are spinning up in response to words that are said, like this, Hawk Tua, you know, feels like some kind of a Samoan or something. I don't know, but that was trending on social media. I didn't see it. And then somebody mentioned it in a different video. They were talking about it. Allegedly, it's some crass young female who's referring to the most disgusting act ever done to a penis. And so I don't follow that garbage. I'm an old man. I don't follow that. And I certainly am not interested in what some little girl is doing to some penis. I'm not on social media, by the way. And it's healthy. It's mentally healthy. It's mentally empowering. The downstream is I have to go and proactively search for news and information that is relevant, and I have to pick it out from the garbage. That's the hard part. I think I've got it down to a science, and that's what I try to focus the channel on, the show. I noticed that there are a lot of the cryptocurrency podcasts other than CryptoTalk.fm seem to have gone the way of the dodo. They seem to have not kept up the stream. They've not been consistent. Whereas, you know, I've continually recorded because I like doing it. I like doing the conversation. And most importantly, many of those, they are doing or were doing their shows with the intent of monetizing it, as in turning it into a monetized sort of thing. Now, I do have a plan that you can do monthly called the Triad, but I never hardly talk about it. It's just out there. It's like cryptotalk.fm/join the triad. It's at the top if you're curious about it and all the benefits it offers. But I've never advertised it because it's really more for some people that really want to support the show and support me. They appreciate what's happening and they just want to show some support. It's not intended to be, you know, a full-time something. I make a lot in my endeavor. And so I think my approach is different. Now, I actually had a guest on Casual Talk a while back, and he was like one of the top 1,000 podcasts of all time or something. And he was, you know, I talked to him. He's a really cool dude, but he was saying, you know, normally what you do, and I know this is the normal pattern, right? You turn into a celebrity and then you spin up a podcast. Whereas in my case, I created the podcast long before anybody knew who I was, because I thought that, you know, if you're just doing the podcast because you're a celebrity status, that means that the people who are following you are the same crowd that you would have had regardless. And that's fine. I wanted something different. I wanted to try to attract certain people that wouldn't have known that I existed, but later it becomes a source of appeal. That was more organic to me. Like Joe Rogan already had a fan base prior to him getting into a show. Most of the larger podcasters already had a platform on some other TV or otherwise, radio, before they got into the business. That works for them. It just didn't work for me, brother. So I did take a different approach, and that's what created, you know, at the time, Tales from the Crypto, which then evolved into three different shows, Crypto Talk, Casual Talk, and Combat Talk. Combat Talk is on hiatus right now because boxing sucks. And I'm seeing a bunch of corruption, and so I stopped doing Combat Talk. I do follow the sport, but it's not as entertaining to talk about it as it once was. Casual Talk is still on a regular basis. I'm down to 1 week. And then Crypto Talk has been the longest running of everything that we have on the CTR brand. And I am doing it because I like the conversation. I like to talk about different topics that are crypto related and some non, but I don't need the money from anybody. If you want to show support, it's there for you. I also have a tipping thing with Now Payments. I think it's Now Payments. I have a tipping jar. I have all that, but it's really just for those that some people feel they want to do it. It's not me asking you to do it. So I'm different in that regard, and I think that has contributed to my longevity. I can't say for sure, but that's certainly how it feels. Since I have that control of my money flow, it means I'm insulated from a lot of the disruption that we see in cryptocurrency because I'm self-funded. I make my own money, pay cash for all my stuff, and I bought a house, right? And so now I'm not going to get kicked out of my own house. I actually am in a better situation now than I ever have been overall. And I'm even now still kind of nervous just because, you know, I don't want the government doing something. We got the freaking election coming up. We got other potential disruptive elements that could play in, but at least I'm not going to have to worry about the renting aspect getting in the way or being at risk of not having food. Cause that was a real thing. Now I've got tens of thousands of dollars that I'm owed from my endeavor. That's because they pay in arrears. So I'm good, you know, and I'm committed to paying the home off early. I obviously need to do monthly payments for credit reasons, but I intend to pay the damn thing off early. So I just own it. Then it's just a matter of taxes, which is about $5,000 a year or some odd. Well, I can easily get work that's $5,000 to cover taxes and utilities for another $2,000 or $3,000. So I'm good. And I'm working on making sure I stay good. And my message to you before I get in this, right now is the wrong time. It's up to you, but I feel that it's the wrong time to be gambling away your money. If you're a gambler, you want to roll the dice. I can't tell you what to do specifically, but I do think you should be focused on your own self and preservation of self right now, because there are some news updates that are somewhat good and some not so good. And I believe that money preservation is going to be a key message leading into this November election in the Senate. I think, in my opinion, that anybody who's kind of in waiting in the wings about cryptocurrency should focus on all of your self-money aspects. Get your debts paid off as much as you can. Diversify your portfolio of investments, wherever they may be, whatever they may be. I was looking at something called Mogul, and I might actually even talk about it on Casual Talk, but there's a bunch of these services. I was in one that I forgot the name of, but Mogul, it's pretty cool. These services allow you to own a portion, basically a fractional portion of an actual property, residential property. As an owner of the fractional, you have entitled rights to, you know, reside in it. It's not quite a timeshare, because in a timeshare, you have no ownership interest in the property. You have access to it. You don't really own it. You can't sell it, right? The timeshare, you can't. They say you can, but it's a scam. I'm trying to dance around it. In this one, you have an ownership stake, a fractional ownership stake that is yours. The property itself cannot be totally sold without your stake. It's intriguing. And I was getting into that because I wanted to diversify a little bit more back into real estate. I was in it before, but that was when I was near broke and I only tossed like $1,000 in there. And then when things happened with COVID, I had to pull that money out. Now that I got more money to play with, I do plan to get back into those types of investments as well, just to own different properties in different places. With all that, let's go ahead and talk cryptocurrency. This episode probably won't be too long because what I saw was a little bit boring, but I did have a couple of updates I want to kind of chew through real quick. Coindesk.com, and we're going to zoom out to the month chart, and we're going to start with Bitcoin because it's the one that's currently under significant attack. Bitcoin had a low of 56.3 and a high of 58.2, currently trending downward sharply on the month chart. It's trying to rebound as there's buyers that are buying up all the major dips that are coming from Mt. Gox, as well as Germany. We're currently hovering at the 58,000 mark. So say what you will, there's a lot of scooping up of the Bitcoin that's going on the market because there were a lot of people that wanted to buy in at the lower price points when it started running back up. Remember that Bitcoin was going back down during the whole fiasco, FTX fiasco, was going all the way back down, hit like 12,000 bucks, which was unheard of. That's the crypto crash, the big one. And then when it started going back up to 20 and 30, da, 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 and then people were buying and buying and buying because these are once in a lifetime type prices. These are prices that you weren't going to see significant again. And so now that it's coming back down, there's a strong confidence in the fact that it's going to run up again. We expect that the run up now is going to be easier for it to do because of the halving that took place, but also with general sentiment, the idea that you've got this dump that's happening with Germany and Mt. Gox and all the stuff, and they're just going on the open market. They're just going at whatever price, and they're actually ripping themselves off if you think about it, because by selling it at market, which is what it appears like most of it's going as, what people don't understand is when you sell at market, the price is still going down as you're sell. So let's say you have 500 Bitcoin. Let me just round a number. You have 500 Bitcoin. There's only so many orders that are out there at different price levels. So as those price levels are out, some people put an order in. They want Bitcoin at a certain price. Let's say they want Bitcoin at $58 and $100. Okay, so as it's going down, you're going to start, you hit that 5,800. So right now we're at 58, right? So when it goes up and it hits that 5,800, that order gets fulfilled. It can't go up if there's significant orders on the way down that still need to be fulfilled who are waiting for the market. And if the market is not strong enough to keep it, you know, buoy it up, B-U-O-I, keep it up, then it's not going to, the price is going to go down as they're selling. They're getting less per Bitcoin that's being sold. So when you're selling in these large chunks as they're doing at market rate, it's actually stupid, which is why Justin Sun chimed in and said, look, I'll buy it from you. Let's negotiate a deal and I'll buy it all you at a single rate, which actually would behoove them. But this shows the lack of understanding on the governmental side. The government doesn't understand fair market value. In their mind, they just want to get rid of it. They want to get it off the books. They want to get away from it. They don't want to manage it. They don't want to deal with it. And they don't want to take the time to do it right, which actually costs them money. So now, when you have the government, I'm picking on Germany, but the U.S. has done the same thing. When you have the governments doing this with Bitcoin, which is the one that has the highest value at the moment, why would you then trust them with any sort of cryptocurrency or CBDC when they can't even understand the basics on the Bitcoin side and the strong value that could be there? Now, to be fair, by filling those orders, the ones that are on the lower price, you basically have people who want to be in it and they want to stack more of it, the accumulation phase, as it's referred to. It simply is that they didn't want to pay the full price, which is smart. If you're going to buy it, you should buy it at a discount, just like you would do at a store. Some people are not smart enough to understand why that makes sense. It makes sense because you expect it's going to go up again. If you expect it's going to go up again, why would you want to buy it at the top? Because FOMO tricks you into thinking that's the right answer, when the right answer really is to buy at a discount, just like you would do at a store. Once you can train yourself to buy at a discount, you understand you can go into any of these exchanges that you do have access to. I happen to have a Kraken account, and I booked an order. Now, will my order get fulfilled? Not in the short term, but at the trend that we're doing, it's probably going to get filled at some time. I think I booked it like $50,000. You're like, yeah, it's crazy. It is, but my thought goes to one of my updates here later. In a brief spat, because I said 55 and then it would go back up, and it did, but then it didn't sustain. It went back up again, but then it was going back down, and then as I speak, it's trying to go back up, but the pressure is downward. So it's possible we go even further down to 55, but it feels like there's enough support buying at those discounts to keep it above the 55,000 mark that I predicted, at least in the short term. But based on some activity I was seeing, I suspected it's possible that we could get down to a 50,000 range, albeit briefly, before it goes back up again. Now, I could be way off my rocker, so don't hold me to that as a hard position. I'm simply looking at sentiment because that's where mine comes from. Mine doesn't come from the data specific. I mean, it does in terms of looking at a chart, but sentiment is a stronger, to me, predictor on the movement of things. I can't say for sure that Ethereum will travel the same path, because when you look at Ethereum's month chart, Ethereum had the exact same drop down, but Ethereum has held the 3000 level fairly strong. It did go down to 2994 or some odd, but it went above the 3000 mark and has held that 3000 pretty darn strongly. What it's not done is run back up to its all-time high, which I recall was $4,800, and has not gone on the significant run that we expected that it should. I did notice when I was doing some trades the other day, gas prices seem to be at an all-time low for whatever that is. That could be all the things that they're doing to fix it under the hood, or it could be a lack of that traffic. Because remember what was happening, and I believe that was 2021 and 2022, specifically 2021, I remember. The gas prices were out of, they were nuts, you know, over $100 for certain trades. It was out of control. That was the reason I didn't get into a lot of the projects at the time, because I didn't have a lot of money to burn and the gas prices were nuts. You know, I'm trying to do a $50 trade or something. I was not going to pay $50 in gas. It didn't make any freaking sense. But that was the reality at the time. It seems like the gas prices are way lower than what they were. This is post-transition to proof of stake. And I didn't see anything specifically causing it or contributing to it, but they were dramatically low. I was able to do a trade and it was only like $9 for the trade that I did. And it was a pretty substantial amount traded on that given token. So it's either that a lot of that, some of that was driven off of NFT minting. And I think perhaps shifting some of the NFT minting over to the Polygon network, which is, you know, arguably what, between that and that Sunflower game brought that to its knees. And you had, I think Solana had some NFT, you know, minting, and that brought it to its knees. NFT minting does seem to bring a lot of these to their knees. So perhaps the NFT minting craze has died off of Ethereum, and that's why the prices for gas are so low. They're still nowhere in the realm of low, as you see on Avalanche, for example, as you see on BNB, even to this day, as you see on Solana to this day. As a result, most of the garbage is still spinning up over there. But I did notice that most of these garbage tokens that choose to spin up on Ethereum seem to have greater market caps, with the exception of these select few that go on Solana, like the Bonks of the world. But there are a couple on showing up on Ethereum. They're garbage tokens. They're getting really strong traffic to them. So Ethereum still has some skin in the game. That may be contributing to why it's able to stabilize its price as well that it has done. And I'm impressed at what I see, but it's not been able to get above. It hasn't been able to get back to its all-time high, and it hasn't been able to get above the all-time high in that kind of a struggle. On the Bitcoin side then, some of the contributor factor for its price movement and some of the volatility that we saw going back up now could be some of those Bitcoin ETFs I mentioned. For disclosure, I did have, and I do have, Fidelity ETFs that I bought. I did sell a couple of them for profits, yeah, but I still have a pretty good chunk, and I'm waiting for that price to go down to buy more. I'd like to actually double how much I have, because I'm confident, as I said when I bought in, that the Bitcoin ETFs, that price, that movement is going to be powerful if we get to a point that the Gary Genslers of the world get out of the way. So buying into those now, you're benefiting from the expected price movement of Bitcoin without the risk attributable to holding those assets. Additionally, the IRS is not going to come after you for any taxation around the ETFs, provided you didn't sell it, which is strong. That means that any sort of profit that you gain on those, unrealized gains, I should be clear, you're not going to have them chasing you after for taxes. Whereas on the crypto side, they want to know the moment you had a, even if you didn't sell, which is stupid because you didn't really benefit. It doesn't exist. It's not real. But they have not understood and have not evolved the tax law to understand that until you sell it, you have not made any money. So to try to tax you on something where you have no gain is putting you in the red. It's actually to your detriment to do that, but that's the scam that it was. That's largely a reason why I don't do a lot of heavy trading on cryptocurrency these days, because I already have a pretty deep tax bill simply because I made a heck of a lot more money than I did before. That bill's getting paid. It's easy. But the point is, I didn't want to increase it beyond what it was. And then going forward, it won't be a problem. But there were a lot of inflows, additional inflows on the Bitcoin ETFs that helped contribute to some of the price stability for Bitcoin above the 55,000 mark. This is on the heels of Germany dumping a bunch of its Bitcoin that it had on the books, and it still has a lot of Bitcoin on the books. So we now have a battle. We have a battle of these governments that are dumping these on the market, but there's a strong belief across the board, arguably, in those discounts, as in people are not running from that smoke. They're buying up those discounted Bitcoin, rightfully so, and I believe you should do if you're in Bitcoin, take advantage of discounts. Don't, and I actually had some young kids say this, don't get fooled by the price of it. That's a trick. That's a trap. Buy however much makes sense for you. Whatever's free money that you can invest in it and you can DCA it in and increase your bag and accumulate more at these discounted rates. You don't have to buy $60,000 or $50,000 or $40,000. Sure, it sounds good, but think about it. In the short term, it's probably going to fluctuate between the $50,000 and $60,000 mark anyway. So why do you care about the $50,000 or $60,000 mark? Consider getting as much Bitcoin as you can accumulate if you're already investing in it and you have an interest in it. Maybe that's just $50. Maybe that's just $100. Maybe that's just $500. Whatever that number is that makes sense for you, use that, go in, and then as you see more discounts, buy more on the discount. Buy more on the discount. Buy more on the discount. You can do that. You don't have to fixate on the price of it. The price of it doesn't matter in the short term. It matters when you're going to take profits. And that's the trick. That's what you have to train yourself on, at least in my personal opinion, because I think anybody who's stacking these discounts is going to benefit once everything goes back up. And I do expect a strong trend back up based on additional news coming out more recently. One of those most specifically is the central bank, the feds. They've talked about rates, and rates has been up in the air. Do we increase the rates because we need to get corral inflation? Do we decrease the rates because we're in a good spot? What is the situation? When I went to buy my house, it's connected. When I went to buy my house, obviously the rates were what they were. I had a bunch of idiots on Reddit who swore up and down that it's a bad time to buy a house or a condo or a townhome. And I believe they're not looking at the big picture of rates and interest and how it affects one person and the contrast of buying versus renting. And the bias is not there because I've been on both sides and I understand now, having bought, where I went wrong before the last time I bought. Because the last time I bought, I'm pretty sure the rates were about 5% or 4% or some odd. Sure, but it didn't matter because I didn't have the money to do a strong down payment. That was a critical mistake. When you have the money to do a down payment, the interest still affects you in terms of your monthly, but if you can overpay and pay the principal down, it matters less. You're not going to get nailed with a lot of that interest. The key is to make sure that you are able to pay the basic monthly every single month, regardless of the rate. That goes to the amount of house that you do a mortgage for. If it's a level that you can't afford because you have to have that McMansion up on the hill, that's a different conversation. A lot of people were looking at these rates and they're expecting rates, especially mortgage rates, to go down. They want the rates from way back when they were like 3%. And what I'm telling people is that that's unrealistic because of inflation being out of control. I did not expect a rate decrease in the short term because inflation's still out of control. The government needs us to spend. That's really what we're talking when we say inflation's out of control. The government essentially needs us to spend. A lot of people are not spending, number one, and the reason that they're not spending has to do with the prices, number two. But the prices are correlated to a lot of passback. There's things passed back to you as a consumer. A lot of people then look at some of these expenses that, you know, this you could. It's silly that you can buy a 75 freaking inch TV for $800. back in my day, you know, a plasma TV, and I'm pretty sure it was like 42 freaking inches, and I think it was $15,000. I remember that sitting at Circuit City when my friend and I were down there. So the price then decreased for TV technologies. And obviously LCDs are different than plasma, but the point is that the TV technologies decreased because the demand went up and manufacturing went up because they were able to justify it because of the profit margins of the early adopters. The early adopters paid for what we would later get. No problem. But we also had to understand, and critically, we had to understand where that has worked and where it does not work. It's worked really well for TVs. It's worked really well for laptops. It's worked really well for everything except for what? Cell phones, houses, right? Cars. Think of this though. Does everybody need a TV? I would say no. Does everybody need a laptop? I would say no. Does everybody need a phone? A phone, yes. Do they need a cell phone? I argue no, but many businesses are trying to force the issue. Does everybody need a car? No. Should everybody have at least one car available? I say yes, in my personal opinion. I'm against renting in general, but I understand its value. And I think the home inventory is a problem because it's disconnected. We're either building too much or not building enough. Or we're building too many high-rises or whatever the problem is. We don't have a solid handle on the needs of the masses, what everybody really needs. And so as a result, when it seems like a certain sector gets interested in something, we over-manufacture it. I'm telling you a story because it leads to this Bitcoin update and the rates and everything. Way back in the yesteryear, T-Mobile had, because of Paris Hilton, she was walking around and she had what was called a sidekick, T-Mobile sidekick. It's a little flip device. And that was, you could type and do all this stuff. It had a full keyboard and the whole nine and touch screen and everything. You know, this is at a time when text messaging wasn't that big a deal, but it started to gain some traction. Nobody had any device like that. Most people had a regular flip phone or a regular candy bar phone. Nobody really had these types of devices with full keyboards, and people thought they were ghetto. People thought they were bulky and horrible type of deals. Over time, text messaging starts to get more adoption because it's the quick, you know, tell your kid that you're going to be there in 15 minutes or whatever type of communication. Afterwards, phone calls start to become less of a thing. The phone companies then realize, okay, well, we could go all in on cell phones. This may cause you to cringe, depending on your age. There was a time when I could get what was the top line cell phone for $700 off scratch. You look at now, they force you into a plan. You know, it's paid through the monthly bill, right? So you don't see it. But the bottom line is they're still charging $1,500 to $2,000 for these garbage phones because they are garbage phones. They don't sound good. They still drop calls. The battery life is crap. That's what we're saddled with. We were in the Nextel era. We were dealing with phones that would last three freaking days. In the BlackBerry era, I guarantee you, I was able to type better messages than you could ever do in yours. And my email was just as fast as your text messages, but I had no 160 character limit. Everything, I could do photos, I could do everything is what it was, and I did not necessarily need a cell phone plan once the BlackBerry Pearl came out. The point is, all the businesses, they saw, okay, we can fool these little kids into thinking that this text message automobile, what's it, is the coolest thing since sliced bread, and then we'll charge, and we'll throw a bunch of useless technology into the phone, like cameras and almost cussed cameras and stuff. You know, I was the Fuji film, you know, get the little Fuji film from the supermarket because why do I need to carry a camera around all times? You're listening saying, well, what if there's a world star or whatever, you know, on the street and I need to catch it real quick. Think of why you're trained to look for that crap. The businesses, the society and the celebrities, the influencers, they've trained you to focus on garbage. They've trained you to focus on crap. And as a result, they're making all these fancy devices that they charge more for because they know that you're a sucker and that you'll go after it. Everybody's in the matrix around me now that they're falling straight into it. Whereas me over here, I got a straight up landline. I don't have a monthly bill on my landline. And the landline has 6 devices scattered throughout my home. And it can ring my tablet. And I don't, you know, there's no monthly bill. There's no credit check. There's no monthly bill. There's no nothing. And I own all my devices fresh scratch. So when people are asking me, how is it that you're able to buy a house? How is it you're able to do these things? How did you put 20% down? How is it you own 2 cars paid off? Because I don't fall for the scams. I don't fall for the trap. I am not the kind of consumer that the government really wants to have, which is one that's consuming, that's constantly spending, constantly spending. But the flip is, the Fed, when they keep rates the same, they're assuming, okay, well, since people are buying, there's no reason to drop the rates, right? Okay, so let's just keep it the same. We don't need to spur the economy. All these suckers are still buying this garbage. When you think about cars, I say vehicles, right? All they're doing is rushing towards SUVs and rushing towards trucks. And you look at the price of these things. They start at $35,000. I was trying to get the newer Honda Accord because it's the only sedan I saw that looks like a damn. I don't like the front end. But, other than that, it looks like something. The hybrid. The Touring. And they want at least $37,000 for a used version of this freaking car. Back in my day, you could go down to the Ford dealer, the Toyota dealer, the Nissan dealer, and get a regular sedan, didn't have any AC, didn't have power windows, and it's $9,000 because you're just trying to get a car for your kid who just graduated high school and needs to get to work, right? Or college. That was our reality. We don't have that reality anymore. Even on the used car market, we don't have that reality anymore. When the Fed makes the decision to not increase rates or not decrease rates, it's because the consumption is to their satisfaction. They feel confident in the way that consumption is happening. Consider, though, if consumption is the way that they want it to be, that means that there's less discretionary money going into things like cryptocurrency. This is me spitballing this, and I want you to think about why that makes sense. If we were to increase rates, rates are too high, the spending's out of control, we got to kind of corral this and bring it in. Money is going to flow into things like savings and things like investments or banks that invest on your behalf, something else that is supporting of the economy. Cryptocurrency is one that benefits from discretionary income. It benefits from free money. Well, freedom of money is rare in the current space, I argue. So if that's the case, it means I think that holding the rates is a bad decision. I would rather have seen that we decrease the rates ever slightly, not a crazy decrease, but decrease the rates ever slightly, because what that does is it frees up a little bit more money to cause a little bit more run. We are still seeing support on the Bitcoin side and other tokens where it's not that money's completely gone. But geez, we lost significant gains this most recent. And I'm saying that although there's money that's there, I think there would be more money if we freed up discretionary across the board for people, because I think people would want to get in at the discount rates that we currently have if they were not saddled with debt and saddled with all these manufacturers tossing all this garbage designed to basically take your money. That's my personal opinion on this business. You may have heard Leister at CryptoTalk.fm be hypercritical of cell phones in general. You don't know why. If you're new, welcome. By the way, you don't know why, but I'm going to explain outside of the obvious. The obvious is that you're in the matrix. You're plugged into the matrix. If you're reliant, you just flip on your phone all freaking day. It drives me nuts. If you don't look and see the forest for the trees, I don't know. But the other reason is because we're using cell phones for an intentions that they were never for. We're businesses, when I say we are encouraging consumers to use the phone for everything, right? Use it as your camera. Use it as your GPS. Use it as your freaking flashlight. Use it for your mail. Use it for your messaging. Use it for your logins. Use it for everything, which that's not what it's intended for. And what it does, right, doing that is it gives you a single point of failure, is what's referred to on the business side. Single point of failure. When you have a single point of failure, it simply means there's one thing that if it fails, you're hosed. So I see people that are relying on their phone to unlock doors. I see people rely. There are apartments out there that basically want you to rely on your phone to get into your mailbox or get your packages or unlock your front door or something else and don't have a fallback. The apartment I just went out, there was a key fob still, but there's no physical key backup. That, to me, that is terrible. You should always have the old school physical way of doing a thing. My car does have a keypad on it that I can use to get in if I don't have the key with me. But the truth is, I should always have the key with me. There's no reason not to have it with me. I don't want to use my phone to unlock my freaking car. That doesn't make any sense to me because you still need the freaking key to start the car. And that's, to me, that's the better reality. That's the better way of doing things. But I take it a step further in my concern because security of all the things that you might store within your phone that you're not aware of also contributes to it. It might surprise you to learn that I don't have any sort of banking anything on my tablet. And the reason for this is because it gets stored in the device. When it gets stored in the device, if that gets breached or stolen or something else, you're potentially giving somebody access to something. Now, obviously, it should be timing you out and maybe you can't log in. The point is, it could all happen quickly and you don't know. And there's still data stored that you don't see that could be used to breach your account. Well, Ledger, who's behind the hardware wallet, echoes what I've been saying. They're talking about how security is managed on these mobile devices and the heavy reliance on the mobile devices and the fact that you have to protect those mobile devices greater than you would do when they're not stuck on those mobile devices. This doesn't tell you to avoid cell phones. This is simply saying that when you have single points of failure, you're putting yourself at strong risk. So you're listening to me wondering, well, what should you do? I can't tell you specifically. I can recommend, and all I can do is recommend. First of all, if you're one of those that has, because you're in the matrix, has started to rely on your phone to the degree that you can't seem to function without it, I would consider why you got to that point. In my mind, you should have a regular computer in your home. That could be a laptop. It could be a desktop. Hell, it could be a tablet, but it shouldn't leave your home. That's the point. Because if it's something that's in your home, one of these devices is on your network, but it's in your home, you're adding an additional layer of security to this because somebody would have to break into your house. And if it's a desktop, it's even better because unlikely that somebody's going to be stealing that guy or have the time to do so, especially if it's not obvious and visible. If it's a laptop, that's a different situation because unless it's bolted to the desk, you know, somebody can pick it up and take it. But if it's easier to lock those down from the software side, and some technologies will let you wipe it remotely. You could do that with phones, but that assumes that you set it up. And some, you don't think to set it up. On the laptop side, it's a given. In the Windows 10 side, all you have to do is create an account, and it's pretty much a given that you can do that. And it's easy. I'm saying I would recommend if you don't have, and I actually talked to some young people, it shocked me, who don't have a computer in their home. I would recommend you have a computer in your home. I would recommend that is where you do the majority of your business. I'm talking business. I'm talking your banking. I'm talking anything that has any sensitive data about you. I'm not talking like your college access or things where if it got stolen, it doesn't hurt you any, whatever. But I'm talking your business things. I would isolate those to a home computer that is locked in your house because it helps protect and it lessens the probability something happens as well. For some reason, there are still women out there who somehow, and I don't understand the ergonomics of this, but somehow managed to keep dropping their phones in the toilet. And again, I don't understand the ergonomics of how that's happening, but it seems to be a thing as well. That's another vector of screw up, especially when you get to a world where you're using your phone to log into various things. All you're doing is putting yourself at greater risk. In my opinion, every business function you have, every sensitive bit of data you have should be isolated on a computer. I would not store things on the computer itself. Network storage is reasonably cheap. You set it up on your home network and then you put files on that. And then you can even encrypt those. That way they're protected. That way if the laptop gets stolen, it doesn't matter. It's just a window into the data that's stored up on the drive. I would not put it on cloud storage. Because if you didn't know, a lot of the different breaches, like Paris Hilton, who I referred to, Kim Kardashian and some of the other ones, originated as breaches of iCloud because they were on cloud storage. Now, obviously, they didn't secure their stuff very well, but the point is cloud storage is very risky to put it all out there, and most of these mobile devices, they want you to do that. And they encourage you to do it instead of storing it on the device. It has the right idea, but it puts you at risk versus what I'm describing, which is it's on your computer, locked in your home, and you have network storage on your own network, and your files are there. You're like, well, how do I access it when I'm out of the house? Do you need every file when you leave the home? Probably not. Chances are there's certain files that you might need versus all of them. And if those files don't change that frequently, well, what does it matter? You could just put them on that cloud. Let's say it's a document that you're working on for your college. Sure, you can put that on cloud storage because there's no risk on that one. I'm talking business stuff. I'm talking like your social security card. And, you know, those are things I personally would not be putting in cloud storage or putting on a mobile phone or something else. That's my personal opinion, to keep yourself safe, especially now, because many of the breaches that we're seeing across cryptocurrency originate because it's a mobile device, whether it's a SIM swap attack or just physically taking the freaking phone or social engineering up to the carrier. It's originating from cell phones. So since it's originating from cell phones, they know more people are going YOLO into the phone, so they know it's a vector that they can breach you and take your stuff. And I don't want to see that happen to anybody, so I'm talking that out. Because it seems to be getting worse, not necessarily getting better. In closing, I do think in this next set of months, so August, September specifically, I do think we're going to see a pretty interesting set of decisions coming out of the current government. We have to see how the elections go. That's going to tell us where the future holds all this business. And we have to see, Bitcoin specifically, we have to see what is the true all-time high destination next. We got up to the 70s. That was progress. Now, does it go to the 80s? Does it go to the 90s? You know, how high does this thing go? Knowing that we're going to have crashes. And my closing warning to you is, despite all the climb back up that we have, we're going to have another crash. We're going to have another major crash event because it seems cyclical at this point. All I can tell you is if you're still confident, at least moderately, in cryptocurrency, train yourself to treat it like a discount, just like you do at the store. When you treat it as a discount, it gets easier to accumulate. When you react and buy when it's going up, it's already too damn late. And a lot of these influencers, they know that. They know that that's what you do. And so then they're selling when that's at the top. They're selling at the top so they can take your money. So it's really happening. And I don't want to see that happen to people, especially because there's too much profit opportunities happening and forecasted in the next couple of months here soon.